welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this third and final hour of the Hagman & Hagman Report here on the Global Star Radio Network. Also live on YouTube. Go to HagmanHagman.com, click on the YouTube channel. Bingo, there we are. Very briefly, before we bring Stan Deo on, I want to remind everyone we're going to be in Ohio this coming weekend with Russ Dizdar, L.A. Marzulli, Gary Stearman, the Nephilim Mounds 3 Conference. And, folks, just want to remind you as well, in addition to American Survival Wholesale, this program brought to you in part by Survival 401k. You know, I've never thought about this before, but what a great plan this is. Folks, go to Survival 401k. That's Survival 401k. Excuse me, Survival 401k. If you're sick and tired of being forced to invest in only stocks and what have you, go a different route. You can invest in things such as survival equipment, ammunition, bullion. It's anything you can think of. That's Survival 401k, Survival401k.com, Survival401k.com. Go to HagmanHagman.com, click on the Survival 401k link, and it'll take you there. We're so proud to have with us tonight Mr. Stan Deo from StanDeo.com, StanDeo.com. And, folks, if you go to his website, click on the Show Images link there. Oh, goodness, there are some images there for you to take a look at in the top row. But with that, Stan, welcome to the Hagman & Hagman Report again. Good to have you, buddy.
Thank you. Good to be here. We've made it through another week, guys. No attacks.
We have indeed. No.
I'll tell you, there's a lot of stuff happening that people are pretty well aware of in the financial side of things and political, but I got to looking this week at Russian and Chinese military hardware and what people are saying, the strategic analysts are saying, about the likelihood of a Russian or Chinese and or both invasion of the United States. And it's looking like very possible very soon. I noticed in your chat room there, hi guys in the chat room, I noticed that they're asking about that Russian sub that just parked itself up near Kamchatka Island in the northwestern, the northern part of the Pacific. And that would caught my attention in the news today. A number of people emailed me about that news story, and I started looking into it and realized that there were a number of things that we need to pay attention to real quick. And for those of you who have been kind of putting off getting your house ready for warfare or nuclear war or invasion, that kind of stuff, maybe I can kind of change your mind right now. The Russians are putting in this Borei class submarine, and it's, if you've ever seen the movie The Hunt for Red October with Sean Connery, he was a Russian sub commander of their new Caterpillar drive submarine, then you're going to know what I'm talking about. This is the fourth of these they've built at about $890 million per submarine. And these darn things have a kind of propulsion that makes them really quiet and hard to detect, even with the SOSUS network that the Navy has offshore underwater. They suck in water through grates underneath the submarine, and they compress it and then pulse it out the back. It's a pulsed thruster drive. And they have torpedoes on this thing that can reach out and hit a submarine from about 25 miles away underwater. And their submarine torpedoes are powered with the Skvald-type missile hypervelocities, and they reach 9/10 of the speed of sound when they launch them underwater. And that's somewhere around 500 miles an hour underwater. It's kind of hard for you to play the old World War II games if you're an American sub-commander and you got these guys looking at you with armed torpedoes. And then I got to looking at how quiet this propulsion system on this thing was. It's something like a pulsed version of your jet skis that you play with. Those just run, you know, willy-nilly and shoot it out the back. But the Russian system seems to compress and pulse a gust of water out the back end through these tubes. And because they're propelling their submarine that way, it allows them to kick it from the backside where the thruster is and bend that thruster vent at the back, you know, when they're controlling direction, and spin that thing on a dime. I mean, it's really quite a clever setup for propulsion and steering on the submarine. So, anyway, that's the first part of it. Now, this submarine mean, it's no secret, in essence, that we know that it's there. It's been known since the late 80s when they started talking about building such a thing. And it takes sometimes 12 years to complete laying the framework for it and building it and testing it to get one of these submarines out to sea. This particular submarine in the Russian naval force has the ability to carry missiles on it that have multiple warheads, you know, MIRVs. And these missiles, they will go up into a high-altitude arc and come down over the general target area and will release between 6 and 10 warheads. Now, the way they've got it constructed at the moment or loaded on these submarines, I think they're only going to use 6 warheads per missile. But since they can carry 16 of these missiles with 6 warheads at least on each one, nuclear warheads, that means that one submarine alone could launch 96, at least 96 nuclear bombs over U.S. cities from sitting where it is in Kamchatka, which is on the northwestern side of the North Pacific, near the tip of the Aleutian Islands. So they could sit there, have breakfast, and launch all these things at us, and they could reach Washington from there. And if they got closer in between there and, say, Hawaii and the West Coast, anywhere in there, they've even got overreach. They can reach anything easily with just one sub. They've got 4 of these that we know about. And with these submarine torpedoes that they can use that are just absolutely unbelievably fast, they're a formidable weapon, the whole submarine system. Now, they're similar to what the U.S. has in what's called the Virginia-class submarine. So we haven't, been totally remiss in building defense against this, but the fact that Russian and Chinese subs have sneaked in so close to us here in, from international waters on our west coast without being detected and said, peekaboo, we got you, worries me a great deal. I mean, this year we've heard a couple of reports of that, at least publicly. So why are the Russians now scooting these things over and surrounding us? They can easily hit us from the North Atlantic, from the sub pens up there, and now from the Pacific side. Will we be able to intercept and knock out 400 missiles or 400 warheads heading toward us at the same time? And that's just the Russians, not the Chinese. There are links on that show images page to articles about this, so you can see what I'm talking about. It's really quite a threatening situation, and I think that it is one that we should pay very much attention to, very close attention to, because just one sub can take out nearly 100 of our cities. And if you go to read the reports, there's a nuclear target map in the Modern Survival blog. There's a link to that. And there's also a link on that show images page underneath the picture of the submarine to the diplomat, which tells you about the Red October submarine and how quiet it is and how wonderful it is, and certainly it is. And then on the last picture on that row, there's a link to Forbes magazine in Washington, which has an article that starts out this way: the U.S. has no defense against a Russian nuclear attack, really. And then that article is worth you spending time to read. So those 3 links are up on the show images page. It's not all I'm going to talk about, but certainly that is the catalyst for me addressing the threat of a nuclear war, a nuclear attack, more than a war, a nuclear attack on the United States.
As Obama was in Alaska pushing his, global warming hoax among the nation and the world, we saw that the Chinese subs, surfaced or made their presence known in the waters close to the president in Alaska. Do you believe this was a message, a threat, posturing? We're just kind of a, hey, see what we can do. We can reach you if we want to.
I'm also wondering if it wasn't a signal to Obama to do whatever he's got to do to make us totally defenseless. We're here, we're ready. When you get home, do what we got. You got to do to help us, because he's done everything else he could to help the Russians and the Chinese take us down, either economically or militarily. Mm. We've got a traitor in the White House. I'll say that right now. There's no question in my mind about that.
Complicit with the Russians and Chinese, or just?
Yeah. Okay. And with the Middle Eastern, with the Saudis and a few other of the Arab countries. You know, Obama is their puppet. He's doing what he's told to do by his masters, and that really means destroying America. They've raped us for a lot of our technology. Most of the good stuff is overseas in Europe and China and Russia. They've taken it. You know, we're not manufacturing much of importance in the United States to export it any longer. We're really kind of a drain on the world economy because we're not producing. Not enough. Our balance of trade is negative. We import more than we export. Because of that, Obama, maybe he's positioned in Alaska there to take a leap off to some safe place. I don't know. But the Chinese don't need to posture for his benefit. They might posture for ours. It might also be a signal to the world that something is about to happen.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you remember the America the Babylon book, or CD?
Yes.
Okay. In that were a number of things that pointed to America being the Babylon, or you know, part of the Babylon spoken of in the book of Revelation. But that Babylon is destroyed in 1 hour by fire. And then if you think back to Dmitri Dudeman, the prophet that came over from Europe over here and told Americans, I was shown in dream visions and in visions, he said, that America will burn, you know, from coast to coast. It will burn. Now, the only thing I can think of other than a solar flare eruption that strikes America direct is a nuclear attack. What about what the Hopi have told us since, you know, the mid-90s? America is going to be invaded by Russia, China, and a Middle Eastern group of countries that will totally destroy it. With the situation between Israel and Iran coming to a head, I mean, this year it's at boiling point, explosive point right at the moment. America has to be neutralized, so there's no hope of any American interference in what Russia and China and the Arab nations do to Israel.
Right.
So the closer we get to that situation blowing up over there, the closer it is to America being totally neutered. And I'm pretty sure that will be a nuclear attack.
Hmm. All right.
Now, that's not, you know, that doesn't say that you know, everything ends, but it's saying that we need to get off, you know, the comfortable chair and start being sure we've got the provisions around the house or your bug out place or wherever to weather fallout from nuclear explosions, because there are at least 120 cities, which Holly's addressed in her books, which are nuclear targets for our enemies. And if those major cities are taken out, there's going to be an exodus of survivors, some injured and others not, but just being foraging for supplies and whatever. This means that you want to be away from the cities, and you want to have provisions to take care of you and your family and friends that are huddled together. Now, talk about being ahead of the time. When she first published the Dare to Prepare book back in 1998, I think it was, something like that, 99. Yeah. It's now gone through several generations. It's in the fifth edition of it. And I was just looking at it today while I was looking at all this nuclear war stuff, and I thought, I know she put some stuff in there about nuclear war and how to deal with it and how to prepare for it in your home if you're not hit directly, how you can weather the fallout cloud, and how to prepare with just stuff you'd find around the house to build a little tiny corner of the house that can protect you from the ash and fallout and that kind of stuff. And there's nearly 60 pages in that 600-page book. Nearly a tenth of it is devoted to fallout shelter, building it inside your house, or if you want to, I don't know whether it's time to do this, but if you want to do what FEMA suggested back in 1987 in the document H-12-4.0, they told you how to build. They gave you the plans to build a shelter, a nuclear shelter, from masonry block and other stuff that you can get down at the hardware store. And Holly had to go and forage for that and find somebody that had a copy of that document. stuck in a dusty old back drawer because FEMA wasn't releasing it anymore. We actually did get it from FEMA, but I mean it was just something that they weren't even putting out anymore. And but she was able to get a copy from a person that worked for FEMA, so you know you can see the layouts. There's just so many ways to do it and modify the plans to do various things. And there are blueprint drawings in the book showing how to do your hatchways, your concrete beams. That's if you're going to build a, you know, regularly, like a dedicated thing to be a nuclear fallout shelter. But if you're going to do it inside your house or in your basement, there are even drawings and explanations of how to do it and use certain things, materials, that will shield you from the radiation coming from the dust cloud and stuff like that. You know, if you want to have shielding for, say, well, this probably means nothing to a lot of you, but 500 rads per hour, she's got a list in there of lead, concrete, steel, earth, water, wood, newspapers, plywood. These are the kind of things you can get around the house and tell you how many inches of that you have to have over you and to the side where you'd be exposed to the dust coming from the fallout cloud and how it will protect you. You know, very common sense stuff. But it's time for people to start getting ready to, you know, prepare for a nuclear attack and the aftermath of that, which will be a much longer and painful thing for the community. To tell you how serious people are taking this, you know, back in, what was it, June, early June, we realized that we needed to get some more books or order them. We got them in July. They were gone at the end of July. We ordered another lot. They're gone now. We put in another emergency order to our printers, and we can't get the books in until, I think, the 28th of this month. People are just absolutely going berserk trying to figure out. They realize that we're headed for this. And this is the push on my spirit for this show tonight is you need to pay attention to how your family is going to endure an attack and an after-the-attack situation where you have roaming gangs and where you have people after your resources. Now, one of your listeners wrote in and said to me, you know, look, you mentioned on the program last week about be prepared to go walk about if you have to. It might be drive about to a nearby place together with others like yourself. It might be walk about. But realize that if you're in close to civilization, that, you know, people will probably have an inkling that you have supplies, you know, food and water and shelter. And you've either got to share it with them or, you know, maybe fight them. And so this is why I'm suggesting people be sure they have supplies dropped outside their city or outside their community in places where they can get to it later on foot or by car, because what they have stored in their home may be lost due to, you know, invaders or, you know, gangs or whatever. We're looking at the same problem here ourselves. So that's what I meant. And you can't save it all. You know, if you've got, you know, a few hundred pounds of lead and bullets and guns, and you got a bunch of you know, frozen or dehydrated foods and things like that, and water, you can't carry that all on your back. So that's why we've always suggested, like the military does to its SEALs and stuff like that, is to put supplies out in at least two, maybe three or four directions away from your city so that you can get to those supplies when you have to leave your main domicile. Hopefully, and I know that not everybody agrees with the pre-tribulation rapture view that I have and Holly has, but we're hoping that we are not here to have to execute that ourselves, you know, that we'll be raptured out. But in case we're not, we are preparing and have been advising people to prepare themselves for dealing with a nuclear attack and civil disorder because of that. I mean, when the Hopis say it, when the Bible says it, you know, when Dimitri Dudeman says it, and a number of other people have written to us with dream visions in the last year or two, you better say it's coming, and you better get prepared. That's just, anyway, it was heavy on my heart. I'm sitting here in the office looking at, all right, now what boxes do we take somewhere else and that kind of stuff. We're in the mode of get ready, it's coming.
Stan, what advice would you give to people out there on a local level looking for like-minded people? Obviously, if what you talk about comes to fruition, nobody's going to be able to survive this alone. It's going to have to be a community-oriented mindset with people helping people, you know, like the true sense of community. Do you have any ideas of how people can get together, how people can forge these partnerships in their local communities now, whether it's, you know, visiting, you know, farmer co-ops or gun ranges?
I mean, how would you do it without giving away your position?
Right. What's a sound way to...
Well, it's going to vary with your situation, with your community, obviously. But in our community here, we have a couple of stores locally that are selling, you know, guns and ammo and that kind of stuff, and that's a natural place to go to talk to people about what's wrong and how to deal with it. That's not guaranteeing you they will all be Christian types and trustworthy, but that's where you get introduced to people in that mindset, and we've done that ourselves and found a number of former military personnel that frequent these places and, you know, had private discussions with them on preparations to, that we can take together. And so that would be one suggestion. You know, maybe a church. Some churches are pretty aware and on, you know, on the ball. It's going to depend from community to community which ones are. A lot of them, sadly, are, you know, part of the corporate churchianity, and they do not really spend a lot of time talking about the negative side of current events and how they might be part of prophecy and right around the corner, because that tends to hurt attendance and tithing. But it is what's happening, and that's what you've got to look for. We've been to a number of churches around here, visited them to see what they were about, and goodness gracious, talking about the things that you and I talk about on this show is a no-no in those places. No, no, no. We don't want to hear that. So you're going to have to just pick and choose those groups. I found one guy, a former... what do you call him, a sniper for the Army, here in a car dealership. He was the head of sales there, and we got to talking and wandered off to the side, and this guy had 40 confirmed kills under his belt. I mean, and is teaching his daughter to be a sniper, you know, and she's, you know, a grown adult. But so it let me know that we have another asset there, and he knows that he has another asset with us. It's just a matter of, you know, picking your conversation and people you talk to in daily life, and finding out who they are, and having a cup of coffee or a meal with them, and say, okay, what's going on? I mean, we've been invited by several people to join them on their properties outside the city. So the good Lord is certainly leading people our way to, you know, forge joint operations. And I've had a dream vision that showed me that we would be with a number of people, probably in a, not in a city environment. And one lady in Canada just wrote us today that she'd had a dream vision about you and I and Holly and our, you know, our wives and stuff. Did you get that from Deb up in Canada today?
I haven't been by.
Okay, well, you'll get it. Anyway, and she was talking about us, you know, the Hagmans and the Zayos being in a big warehouse-looking thing, a two-story thing, living in the top of it and in the bottom part of it, having a lot of food and supplies and stuff, helping those who had nothing. So, I mean, this is the kind of mentality that's permeating the people out there that we deal with and that you address with your show. I think that the Spirit is moving through the community and saying, okay, guys, now you've had time to prepare, and this is where you get real serious about it and be ready to run on a moment's notice to your bug-out place.
Yeah, and many people are having dreams and visions. Many people are having supernatural prompts from the Lord as to indicators to prepare to mobilize. Many feel,
you
uneasy.
Know, we've been hearing more and more like messages like this, Dan. I mean, people having visions, dreams.
Yeah.
Feelings. I mean, it's on the rise.
And think about the possibility or potential for escape of true believing Christians when they complete their electronic total takeover of everything, you know, being able to monitor every inch of the planet via, you know, electromagnetics and technology, where there will be no place to hide except in the Spirit of the Lord and His supernatural protection.
I firmly believe that, and I think the Holy Spirit will protect the people that are on the earth at that time that are believers. And again, because I think there's a pre-trib rapture and then a rapture of the 144,000 Jewish evangelists somewhere in the middle of the tribulation, and then the Lord's return with the church at the end of the tribulation, I believe that there will be people in the, at least the first 3.5 years of the tribulation that see that they should have been switched on with the Lord and will be saved, but they will probably be exposed to a very high probability of being dead before they're saved. You know, I mean, like they'll do it as a being raised from the grave. The rapture says it's going to raise the dead at that time before it it takes the living believers at that moment out of their bodies. It's, you're not going to go up there in the same body because the corruptible body cannot inherit the kingdom, it says. But this is what it's telling you, is just get out of it if you can. If you can't, then prepare what we're telling you to do. And certainly we've made it known to our family and a few of our friends that if you don't go, and if we don't go, we're going to be here with this stuff, and we need to get together and find a place to, you know, form a community. And I'm sure that the Lord will provide for us wherever that is, and he will provide instruction for us to get to those places. Having had dream visions myself, I know how specific those things can be, right down to spelling the name of where you should be and when. And as you said, Doug, a lot of people are writing in and phoning in and telling you and I and a number of us who are in this field what their dream visions are. And it's all right now current and saying get prepared. So that's what we need to help on the show, to get people active and get them ready.
Yes, yeah. We do.
I got to tell you, Stan, I don't think I've ever had a time during this show where this past weekend I've had more people than I think over the weekend I've had more people send me emails about dreams and visions about the immediate future. And I don't know, you know, look, I don't know if a lot of this is because we talk about it or if it's I don't know why, but one can certainly cannot deny the fact that these are on the rise. So I was just astounded by the number of people, nuclear explosions, EMPs, every kind of, I don't know, disaster imaginable. It was there.
You know, I'm looking at the chat here, and there are a few people on your chat here who are, you know, having a whinge about the fact that I'm talking about a pre-trib rapture. And I want to clear the attitude here and say that I don't believe, and I don't know that any of my pre-trib fellow believers believe you should sit on your backside and do nothing and wait for the great liftoff and that's it. I believe you should prepare to endure as many months or years as it takes until the rapture occurs. And I do look up, as the Bible says, I do look up and say, I'm looking forward to you coming and get me, and I hope that I am found worthy to be, you know, caught up as part of the bride in that rapture. But I am certainly not advocating that you sit and do nothing.
I never heard that message from you at all. You know, and it's no, you know, we excuse me, we have to occupy until he comes, and that's otherwise, why write Dare to Prepare? Otherwise, why write Cosmic Conspiracy? Both folks, books you can see on our table here.
Think about the historical biblical accounts of when the Jews were taken out of Egypt. It wasn't, you know, the Lord didn't miraculously remove them from the land of Egypt and place them into the land he allotted for them. They had to go through trials, tribulations. They wandered in the desert. They had to fight for their land. So much happened. And I want the church to understand that just as the Exodus from Egypt happened, I believe too that Christians in this lifetime, especially in America, are going to have an exodus of their own. We're going to have an experience where it's us and the Lord and our survival dependent on the Lord's provision. And we need to be ready for that rapture, pre-tribulation or post-tribulation rapture or not. This is something that we need to have in our mind. We need to, you know, be prepared to endure, and we need to accept the Lord and his will and what he wants for us. We might not like it, but it is going to be for our benefit.
You remember, guys, The Stand, written by Stephen King?
Yes.
I wouldn't say his viewpoint is like, you know, a Christian viewpoint, but The Stand was the closest thing to what we're talking about that I've seen in major works like this. In that, people from all over the earth, after a great disease wiped out, you know, majority of the Americans and the people on the planet, they all started getting these dreams showing them to go to a place in Colorado, to a place where this old woman would be sitting on the porch, an old, down south colored woman with white hair and a corncob pipe and a rocking chair. And they all had these visions of her and these dreams, and they started migrating to that place. And they all eventually got together because they were led there by the dreams. So, having had the dream visions myself and others that you're talking about, I know that this is a reliable method of communication, and it will be specific to those who are getting those things. It'll say, go to 521 such and such street or to this county in this state and look for blah, blah, blah. So that I am positive this will happen. We'll get the help that we need. But we need to do what we can first to make provision as best we can first, and then wait for the Lord to do the rest.
Stan, are you familiar with Stalin back in 1951? I just saw this, and I'm not sure where I saw this. He had plans, or at least secret war plans, to invade the United States. Did you invade Alaska? Did you ever see any of that, or
I
know what I'm talking about?
But I know that that many of the leading military personnel in the States after World War II were against the White House's policy of sucking up to the Russians. They wanted to follow a Patton and go right into Russia and take them as well as Germany, because they saw them as an eventual threat, and it might have been because of Stalin's desire to do that.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, I just saw this, and again, I don't remember where I saw it, but I did research it, and I found it to be true. Where Stalin was making plans to heat up the Cold War by invading Alaska, and let's see, it was a paper, Stalin and the Cold War, 1945 to 1953. It was a paper in a conference, I think it was held at Yale, talking about the period that followed World War II. So I just find it very interesting that this is. Man, it's
yeah,
makes you sit up and take notice, that's for sure. Yeah, I have a question here from somebody who sent this by email. The city is targeted. I mean, basically, would it be just the major cities? Would it be, literally hundreds of cities? Would it be half a dozen cities, do you think, in an initial strike by the Russians? Or whoever.
Okay. Holly, I was just asking Holly. I knew she had the 120 target cities listed in the Dare to Prepare PD, the CD-ROM, the Prudent Places, it's Prudent Places USA.
Prudent Places.
It tells about that. But I think she may have mentioned it in the Dare to Prepare book as well. I'm just trying to see in the index here if I can find it, actually. Target cities. Target. Oh, yeah, well, there's a few of them. I can't look for it right now. There's about 15 different pages mentioning target, I assume one of those is the target cities. But there are 120 major cities, and if you look to one of those links on the site there, it doesn't tell you the names of them, but on the show images page there is a link that goes to a map with red dots all over it, and that's a general idea of the target cities that are known. But the details of it would be in the Prudent Places.
Got it. Okay. It's difficult for me to believe, especially after October, the missiles of October. The whole missiles down in Cuba back in the '60s. People, you can watch the documentaries, the movies, and now here we are. Looking at this again, and Stan, I was looking at the Syrian situation where Putin's sending in military, and the United States is saying, wait a minute, you do that, we look at this as an escalation. I mean, we're poking at the bear. We destabilized Syria, basically, and now we're daring Putin to go in there and fight off ISIS. It's mind-blowing sometimes.
It is, and General Soleimani from Iran that was poking around down there in Iraq, right in that same region, he stepped in when the new leadership of Iraq took over, and they were in their first year of office. They were, the prime minister there was a bit uncertain of his power and responsibilities, and so he agreed to let Iran send Qasem Soleimani down to lead his troops, you know, the Iraqi troops, in fighting ISIS. But now then, they've realized in Iraq that, oh, wait a minute, that might not be such a good idea, because Soleimani from Iran is pushing a brand of a philosophy of Islam that is, you know, counter ISIS, but it's certainly also going to be counter what they do in Iraq. And Iraq is now at threat because they've let Soleimani come in there and nose around and see what their resources and, you know, and attitudes are in their army and whatever. And it makes Iraq another target for Iran in addition to Syria. And that whole area there, I tell you, keeps your eye on Soleimani and on Iran and the Russians helping that whole situation in favor of Iran.
Did you see that the U.S. has recently given $4 billion of military weaponry to Saudi Arabia and Israel just recently?
Yeah, I did see that. I don't know whether how much of that Israel got, but yes, I did see that.
Would you say that that's a build-up to counter the rebel and other forces in the Middle East that are causing these problems or allegedly causing these problems?
It's hard to say from the outside of the White House what that is really for, because the Saudis are threatening, I think, to abandon the U.S. petrodollar, which is, you know, probably okay with Obama, but for the rest of us that want America to survive, that's not. The Saudis did send a man over to one of their royal family over to see, I think it was the king himself, came over to see Obama and Kerry here in the last week or two. And although the details, the private details of the meeting aren't made public, the speculation is that's what it was for. So some sort of an appeasement is being made toward Saudi Arabia to keep them on side. Israel getting part of that defense money and Saudi Arabia getting part of that defense money is it's kind of misleading in my mind, because I think that the money needs to all go to Israel. The Saudis have got plenty of money. They have got plenty of oil and plenty of money. So I don't know why they got any money at all, unless it's because they said to Obama, oh, look, we don't want to pay for this. You do it, you know, because they control him. That whole area over there, that whole theater of operation is so interbred and intermixed, and, you know, who's up who and who's with that one, and it is a nightmare of political intrigue. The only thing I can see over there that's clear is that Israel is under attack on all sides. It can't depend on the United States, and it must make a preemptive strike, because it cannot stand one nuclear hit from Iran or the Russians helping the Iranians, or, you know, or the Syrians, or whoever they're with. Understand that Syria, the southwestern border of it, is at the Golan Heights, and you stumble across a little line there, and you're in northern Israel. So Israel cannot afford to let Russian missiles armed with nuclear warheads be launched from Iran or Lebanon, you know, or Syria. They're just... This situation is now at past Balkan powder keg stage. It is about to ignite. It is a time to realize this and to make preparations.
Last week, Stan, you talked about the energy situation pertaining to Israel and the surrounding countries. If you could reiterate a little bit, what are we looking at as far as Israel's ability to develop oil and natural gas and the reservoirs that are in the Middle East that have Saudi Arabia and Egypt and the countries around have been using for decades now?
Joe, that's an interesting question, actually. I should have addressed that. I did last week, but didn't bring an update. What is happening is that Israel had an agreement to supply Egypt natural gas. And there was a pipeline between Egypt and Israel, a natural gas pipeline that Nimrod Novik engineered before he left the Merhav Corporation. And that gas pipeline is now, you know, pretty soon it's going to be useless, because the Egyptians have found their own gas field offshore in the Mediterranean. And so they'll be getting their own gas, and they won't need to pay Israel for the natural gas, which of course made a lot of the shares, well, the two major shares, Israeli-owned oil exploration and gas companies, shares dropped like a rock. And so they've got to find new markets. But if they find oil, now the oil is easier for them to sell overseas because you can put it on tankers, and it's very dense, concentrated energy rather than a gaseous or even liquid gas transfers through pipelines. The one that Dick Cheney and the Rockefellers, the oil field, they finally got the permits from Israel to explore, is on the Syrian side of the Golan Heights of the, you know, at the Dead Sea. And they announced today, just about 12 hours ago, that they had already found deep oil fields underneath the Golan Heights. And they were just waiting for the permit to be granted by Israel before they would announce it. Well, gosh, there's a huge oil supply there. And the next announcement, I think, is going to come when Zion Oil or some of the other oil companies that are not Israeli-owned, who have been given permits on the in the Caesarea area there north of Tel Aviv, when they find the great pool, the one that's up in the valley of where the Armageddon crisis is going to take place in the Megiddo Plain, there's a huge oil reserve down there. Now, the fact that they're now starting to grant these permits to other countries to develop that means that they're getting serious about collecting revenues from their energy fields in the oil, even though it's deep under Israel. This in itself is volatile enough to precipitate World War III between the Israelis and their Arab neighbors, who will claim that their Israelis are stealing their oil, et cetera, et cetera. But I discussed all that last week. So yes, they are moving rapidly now then to shore up their energy stocks and the reserves that they are going to find officially and make it public. This Egyptian situation has forced their hand now. So with a Chinese company, you know, with that group there, AFEK Oil, AFEK, we can see that the game is intensifying. And I just I wonder why Cheney's group announced the find of the oil, even though they knew about it beforehand, why they decided to go ahead and do it now, just because the permit had been granted. It's almost like trying to start the fire, to ignite the war over there.
And the pipeline in Afghanistan, the lithium, the amount of lithium that has been in Afghanistan, was this not one of their primary missions when taking over Afghanistan, was to be able to siphon the lithium deposits?
In Afghanistan?
Yeah, in Afghanistan.
I don't know. I know that Australia had huge deposits of lithium, and lithium has certainly been touted as a way to make electric cars run by using two states of lithium oxide, and charges stored between them, and it'd be a very efficient, reusable source once you converted petroleum energy to electrical and then to lithium storage. So that would make it quite valuable in the world to come for electric vehicles. So I don't know whether they had it there, you know, whether that's what they were doing or not.
Gotcha. Stan, I mean, pretty heavy week this week. Your show images, man, there's no way around this.
Look, I thought about this morning. You know, I was talking to the Lord early in the morning, and I said, look, you know, I don't want to get on the show tonight and just waffle on about this and that, you know. I said, you know, what is important? Show me what's important. And I sat down in front of the computer early in the day and looked at the screen and kind of stared at it, you know, what is important, duh. And suddenly this email flipped on. Somebody sent me this email. I think it was John Rolls. And I looked at it, and I thought, that submarine, what?
Right.
And suddenly I was away, and I knew that this is what we're supposed to be talking about today.
Wow. Yeah, as I looked at the images and as I considered the implications, and I'm considering the implications right now, you know, against the backdrop of what's happening all throughout the rest of this month, the New World Order Pope coming to the United States.
Yeah.
The other signs, I'll just leave it at that, whether you believe in the timing of the moons, and I mean, there's just so much taking place all throughout the next 30 days, the Jewish feast days and such. My goodness, it just seems like we are. Where do we look? And you know, aside from the Word and the Bible, of course, but it just seems like we're really being kind of slapped outside the head, don't you think? I mean, man, it's,
we are.
Pay attention.
Someone just posted on your chat thing, Manny did, that Afghanistan had lithium, nickel, and opium, but no oil. So maybe you're right. Maybe it was after the lithium. Yeah. Certainly, there's plenty of opium supplies around, but lithium is rather rare.
And the opium, I think, increased, 800% after U.S. occupation in Afghanistan?
Yeah. Well, you got to keep the troops happy, don't you?
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing how both the opium trade across, from that area to South America and up in Central America and Mexico, how that increased, and how the sex trafficking also. And no one talks about the sex trafficking, by the way, and how that's increased going the other way. That's
you know the opium trade. You mentioned that. I remember finding, when I was discovering the Garden of Eden, I had to track through some of King Solomon's sources for his gold and stuff, because it related to where the Garden of Eden was. And the one that really kind of amused me was the one up in the northern part of Africa there, where Tarshish was, the ships of Tarshish, to go up there and trade and get the stuff and bring it back to Israel. What does Tarshish mean? Well, Ashish is one of those glass-blown things where dope heads, you know, opium smokers, suck it, you know, through the water and it bubbles in it, and they get a high from it. And the tar of sheesh was tar, meaning that drug-like syrupy stuff you get from the flowers. So they were all smoking dope there during Solomon's time in the Tarshish trade ships. And here we are again with a modern Solomon coming to the front in the Middle East, in the Mediterranean area for sure. And you've got Afghanistan with opium fields. You've got, you know, opium fields in a number of countries there. But just, wow, it's just coincidental, I guess, but it certainly is related to what was happening in Solomon's time in that area. So much so.
Yeah, indeed. Exactly.
Hey, and one thing I wanted to bring up this time. Remember, we've talked before, I have on the show, about the great deception, you know, the UFO deception, all that kind of stuff. Fooling the very elect, if such were possible. Well, Holly and I were studying some of Perry Stone's discussions on the tribulation period and whatever, and who the elect are, what portions of the Bible the elect means, the church or Israel. And actually, in Matthew, when Jesus is talking to you're talking about that the very elect would be fooled if such were possible, he's talking about the elect of Israel, not the church. Which to me says that the saucer invasion, all that kind of stuff, will manifest at mid-tribulation, and probably at the time that the 144,000 Jewish, you know, evangelists have finished their task and they are taken away in the rapture of the 144,000. But at that time, the elect of Israel will not, which would be the 144,000, I guess, will not be even subject to believing the alien landing claiming to be God, because they will be gone. Anyway, that's just something I wanted to throw in there for people to think about, because it's a new discovery at our household this week that it's a possibility.
Very interesting.
Dan, in the closing minutes, we got about 4 minutes left. Anything you think we should keep our eyes on in this next week? Anything we haven't covered that you want to cover? And next week will be the drawing for the 10 free Dare to Prepare books also.
Good timing, by the way.
Say again?
Just great timing on that.
It is. People are going to really need it. I think we've got about 700 people, which is better than average for the giveaways. Yeah. Actually, it's over 700. That's They're good. Still coming in now as I look at the screen here. There must be people listening and doing that. But, yeah, it is a good time for them to have a Dare to Prepare gift there. The other thing this week and a few weeks later to watch for is a negotiation between Israel and Turkey. Now, President Erdogan in Turkey is a real, narcissist, thinks he's a modern Solomon himself, but, you know, he can do no wrong, but he's about to lose power. And the Israelis are hoping he will, because at a grassroots level in Turkey, they're wanting Israel to be able to build the Temple of Solomon on the Temple Mount. And so you'll see that there, Israel, if you just look up on the news in Jewish Chronicle or on Google Earth, look up, or say Google Earth, Google News, look up Israel and Turkey are on the brink of a new start. And you'll see in there what is happening is that Israel and Turkey are moving closer together, which means that the plans to build the temple on the Temple Mount, the third temple, are going to come closer to fruition if Erdogan is removed from office. And that's a real possibility shortly. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Seeing the amount of dictators in that region that have already been overthrown, wouldn't surprise
NATO
me.
NATO, too. Would affect NATO. And you know, what really bothers me, and I think what people really need to keep their eyes on, is the refugees. That situation, people are saying, oh, you know, my goodness, well, look at the number of refugees, and it's a Trojan horse. Okay, I get all that. But two things. Number one, it's been the this regime's goal all along, through their parallel State Department and the CIA operations, to create a NATO air cap over portions of Syria, and that seems to be coming to fruition. And the refugees, I mean, we, the American intelligence, the Western intelligence, U.S., U.K., France, and yes, even Mossad to some extent, Israel to some extent, attempted to overthrow Assad, and look what we have. We kind of created that, or somewhat responsible in creating that.
Well, yeah, and is that just bad judgment or luck of the draw or what? I don't know. I mean, when the Western countries try to go over into the Arab countries and understand the culture and effect a positive change out of that, it's almost impossible because you had to have been raised in the area to know about the ownership problems that date back thousands of years between this sheikh's property and that one, and you know, the grudges, and
sure.
It's just a nightmare. The British absolutely screwed that situation in the post-World War II partitioning. Their modus operandi. I mean, in any country they attacked or conquered, they wanted to make it so that they were fighting amongst themselves over territory and properties in the redistribution of the resources once the British had finished. But anyway, I think, yeah, indirectly, we certainly have a lot to answer for.
Indeed. Well, Stan, God bless you. Thank you so much for keeping us informed. That sub, I'm going to be taking a look more at that, you know. Wow. That's all I can say is wow.
And don't forget, next Tuesday, when Stan joins us on September 15th, he will announce the winners of those drawings, those 10 lucky people for Dare to Prepare, and the giveaway. Stan had come on the show and offered a few weeks back the drawing, September 15th, next Tuesday.
Yeah, standale.com. The information's right there. You can do it. But Stan, God bless you, man. Thanks for
God bless you, guys.
Your time this week. Wow. I'm going to be looking more.
Yeah, well, I paid particular attention to that sub because it used a propulsion that was very similar to what I was talking about. Between that and the Skval torpedo propulsion system is what I've been working on for years, so I know it's quite a formidable submarine. Anyway.
You know of what you speak, right?
Next week.
Dangerous.
All right, brother. God bless. Thank you so much.
God willing, we'll see you next week, Stan. Tell Holly we said hi, and the furry friends as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Joe. I'll tell them. Bye-bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
God bless, Dan.
All right. So tomorrow, the second hour, or third hour, Jonathan Kahn.
First hour, we'll hit news. Second hour, we'll take some phone calls or email questions or continue with news. Third hour, Jonathan Kahn will be our guest. Yeah. Thursday, Stim Alberino, Steve Quayle, and Pastor David Langford. And Friday, we haven't scheduled it in, but I'm pretty 99% sure Gilbert Sard will be our guest. Going to be a great closeout to the week.
We'll see what happens, but yeah.
And a fantastic show. Thank you to Stan. Thank you to L.A. Marzulli. Look forward to the NephilimMounds3.com for the Nephilim Mounds 3 conference coming up in Ohio this weekend. Thank you, Global Star Radio Network. Until tomorrow, stay safe. God bless. We'll be back.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.